At Wesley Biblical Seminary, we believe God is raising up a movement across our nation and around the world who hold fast to the inerrancy of Scripture and the hope of holiness. We do this through bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees, certificate programs, and even training for lay people. So whatever your next step is in being equipped for ministry, we're here for you. And if you believe these are the kind of pastors we need leading churches in the future, we invite you to think about giving to Wesley Biblical Seminary. Learn more about us at wbs.edu.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for joining us. And yes, we are live, finally, today, back here on the program as we took a few days off for the Christmas break. Fred Jackson joining me. Good morning, Fred.
Good to be back.
And Chris Woodward.
Good morning.
So, Chris, what did you guys do for Christmas there, Fred?
Well, we kind of spread it out a little bit. We have a daughter and our son-in-law and granddaughter to live down in the Mobile area. So we spent a little time down there, of course, back home here in Tupelo for the rest of the Christmas and enjoying the summer weather. Just, it's been lovely.
Yeah. Until now. Until now, it's been really, really pleasant. Temperatures in the 70s.
I tell you.
For the most part, the last week or so, but now it's dipping down because a winter storm is crossing the Canadian border.
Right.
And really,
yeah, you can blame us. Go ahead.
We always do, wreaking havoc on the upper Midwest and the Northeast.
Yeah, it brings new meaning to the war of northern aggression.
Yeah. Here in these did you have a good Christmas there, Chris?
I did. Okay. I did. We went to L.A., Lower Algoma, as some people in our parts know, the Algoma area. But my wife's, we did Christmas Eve with my mother-in-law. We did Christmas morning breakfast with another set of in-laws. And then we had the big family thing Christmas night. And just really enjoyed it. A lot of food. I'm still full. Probably don't need to eat until the new year.
Well, we're at that stage. Our three kids have kids of their own, like Fred, like you do. And they have their own big deal on Christmas Day, so we always have our Christmas a few days prior to actual Christmas Day, our family Christmas. So my wife said, she looked at the weather. She said, Destin looks really nice right now, and there's nothing stopping us.
There you go.
Because nobody needs us on Christmas Day. We've already had our Christmas, and they're all going to their other families. She said, so why don't we just get in the car and do like – people who don't have kids at home do. They just go where they want to when they want to if they
there
can.
There you go.
So we went down to the beach for a few days.
Enjoyed
that.
Yeah.
And winter is about to be here for most of the country.
I walked around the corner of my house this morning early when I get up, and the wind had shifted from that nice southern warm breeze to the northern frigid breeze.
Yep.
50-degree drop.
Yep. We met some really nice people, the snowbirds.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of snowbirds go to the Gulf Coast
to
escape winter. This couple was from Iowa.
Oh, yeah.
They were Iowa, and they were like, we're staying here to March. We paid our dues.
Don't blame them.
30 years in the Iowa winters, and we're gonna be down here for a few months. So
you know what's funny? In January and February in Destin, you see the Minnesota tax
change.
For them, it's wonderful.
I know 63 is balmy.
It's great.
Balmy in January.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, we hope you had a nice Christmas, everybody, and looking forward to a great 2026. We got a lot of news and stuff to catch up on that's happened the last few days. What's going on now, right now?
Well,
Chris?
Something you've heard about all morning on American Family News, and you'll continue to hear about on American Family News at the top of every hour, is a meeting today in Mar-a-Lago, Florida's resort for President Trump. He's hosting Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for continued talks on that U.S. brokered peace deal between Israel and Hamas. This is supposed to involve things like the second phase of that deal, which calls for a couple of things. The rebuilding of Gaza, and oh, by the way, Hamas giving up its weapons and renouncing control in the Gaza Strip. Maybe an uphill battle, but it's good that talks are still continuing here.
Yeah, I was reading about this. Is that happening today?
It is. And it's supposed to begin around 12 Central, so there may be a joint press conference early to mid-afternoon.
Okay, so one of the issues that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, man, it seems like he's been there since Lincoln was president, hasn't he?
Yes.
Been there a while.
President Lincoln today met with Benjamin Netanyahu, Prime Minister of a country that doesn't exist yet. Mm. Anyway, that just does. He has been there a long time, Netanyahu has. But he's going to insist, is Netanyahu, that President Trump follows through, the United States follows through with making sure that Hamas disarms. Mm-hmm. You can't really go on to phase two. How many phases are there?
At one point there were 21 points in his plan.
Yeah. Without making sure that, Israel's enemy Hamas is disarmed completely and totally disarmed.
I'll believe it when I see it. Hamas, there was some quotes in some of the news stories on the weekend, Hamas leaders who are still there saying, you know, we're not giving up our weapons. This is going to be the critical point, quite frankly. Hamas willing to give up control of Gaza, and right now I don't see it. We've seen the skirmishes over the last couple of months there. So I'm not optimistic at this point that we're going to see a successful phase two. Mm-hmm. And if it stops there, then basically, we're back to square one.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what the I'm sure they have a joint press conference maybe later on today.
Yeah.
But is that just a one-day meeting, do you know, I guess?
Maybe? I'm not sure. It may stretch into a couple of days. And I say that because Trump hosted Vladimir Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, over the weekend. They had a joint press conference yesterday. Mm-hmm. And those talks are going to continue in the days ahead with the same people that were part of yesterday's talks.
Yes. Well, so that's what's going on with President Trump. You know, a lot of big decisions to be made, and you know, trying to solve the move forward, I guess, the peace agreement in Israel, mm-hmm. and then also Ukraine and Russia. The Ukrainian-Russia situation, that's been going on 3.5 years now.
It started February of 2022.
Yeah.
Okay, and you know, what's I think of most Americans are just, oh, they're still fighting. Okay, well, next story.
Right.
You know, I don't know, but it seems like the Ukrainian, and that really doesn't impact us. Okay, it's not.
No.
Yeah.
In a way that's economic or any other way like that. Mm-hmm. So.
No, you know, when you look at what Putin continues to do, even over the weekend, more missiles, drone attacks into Kyiv, deep into Kyiv, the capital city. Yet President Trump coming out of the meeting with Zelensky, Chris, yesterday, and kind of talking a little bit optimistic, cut number 8.
I just think we're doing very well. We could be very close. There are one or two very thorny issues, very tough issues, but I think we're doing very well. We've made a lot of progress today, but really we've made it over the last month. This is not a one-day process deal. This is very complicated stuff, but I think when the president says 95, I think, you know, could be close to 95%.
When he says president, is he talking about Zelensky?
Yeah.
Right there? So he's saying that President Trump, Zelensky's 95% on board?
Well, with the peace plan, but, you know, Putin is not going to give up, or he's not willing to go into a ceasefire unless he gets a guarantee of that the one-third portion of the eastern part of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. That's the sticky point for Putin. He doesn't plan any kind of peace deal unless he gets that. And so far, I'm not sure if Zelensky said anything about that, but up to at least this meeting yesterday, what was coming from Zelensky was, we're not willing to give up that turf.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It would be the equivalent of, hypothetically, Mexico invading the U.S. to try to take back the Southwest, which used to belong to Mexico, and then Canada saying, U.S., you need to just let them have it. That's basically what it is.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. You know, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? With respect to President Trump's, I think he has the best of intentions, obviously, in trying to bring peace to the that region between Russia and Zelensky. But with all due respect to the president, we've heard this song before.
Sure.
Yeah.
That is, all the things he just said, very good, we're almost close, the deal's almost done, and then it didn't.
Yeah. I would recommend the administration, and maybe they plan to do this in the days ahead or early on in the new year, but I would recommend the administration trucks out the energy secretary, the Department of Agriculture, all kinds of people that are trying to do things here about the price of energy and the cost of groceries and other things, because the president has been hammered this year for seemingly being more focused on foreign policy matters rather than domestic issues. And the reason I say that he needs to do something to continue to show that he is doing something about it is because we're about to be in the midterms, and it's looking like the Republican Party may lose control of the House.
Yeah, I think they'll pivot. I think President Trump and the Republicans will now pivot, especially President Trump, into, but good grief. I'm not criticizing you and your analysis there, Chris, but he's a president of the United States. He's the leader of the free world. He can walk and chew gum.
I totally agree.
He can walk and chew gum at the same time, meaning he can handle, he has to, by necessity in his job, deal with international affairs, which are ongoing, and they're serious matters that impacts our country and the world. And then he has to also handle domestic issues, legislatively, there's not a lot going on. There's not much he can do. Right now, legislatively, I mean, now with the way the Congress has been divided, you know, the Republicans only have like 3 or 4 votes in the margin in the House. So everything that he does basically has to be done by executive order that he wants to do.
I think the big issue is going to be these Obamacare subsidies.
Yeah.
When they took their Christmas break, they didn't resolve anything. The Democrats are going to try to make their pivotal point. And what you're going to hear from the Democrats is that millions of Americans are going to go without health care unless they get these subsidies. Remember, these are subsidies that grew dramatically because of COVID. And the Democrats want to keep those subsidies. And those subsidies, they go to the drug companies, insurance companies. They don't go directly to the people, which allows the people to say, I'm getting my medical coverage for nothing through Obamacare. So that's going to be the big issue for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is where I get glassy-eyed, okay, when you talk about Obamacare subsidies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think you described it pretty well, but I haven't – there's only so much you can keep up with, right, Fred?
Yeah.
Right, Chris?
Yes.
So during football season, I tune out Obamacare subsidies, okay? Yeah. It just goes to the side, okay? But in all seriousness, this is a big deal.
It is.
And so are you saying that Democrat – but when you say subsidies, what I'm hearing is the federal government or taxpayer money underwriting insurance. Is that what I'm hearing?
That is it.
Taxpayer-funded subsidies.
Yes.
Okay, which would seem to be popular with people.
Oh, sure.
Because you get stuff that you don't have to pay for. Am I right?
That is
we're talking
correct.
About a lot of people.
So why
40,
would the,
40 million.
So why would the Republicans want to stop that?
Well, they want to stop the money going directly to the insurance companies.
Oh, I got you.
Because that allows the insurance companies to keep increasing the rates. And then the federal government just says, okay, we'll pay you more.
Yeah.
Okay, so this was introduced during COVID because of the financial crisis that the pandemic
created.
Pandemic created, right?
Yes.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now,
and like any other federal government program, it goes on into eternity.
Sure.
And gets bigger.
As long as
Uncle Sam is always there with a checkbook,
all right,
people will have no problem increasing a price.
All right.
Now, what Trump wants to do, the Trump administration wants to do, is give money in the form of HSAs, health savings accounts.
Yes.
To people.
Okay, gotcha.
All right. They want to seed that for people.
Okay.
Those are pretty good programs, those HSAs.
Yeah.
Because they're taxed kind of like your 401k program.
Yeah.
You can put money into it.
Gotcha.
And it's a tax deduction for you. So that's the route the Trump administration wants to go.
Right. Why would the Democrats oppose that?
Because it puts responsibility on the people. The other thing is, only people who are in the country legally would qualify for this.
Oh.
Democrats, I would say Democrats want to be there to do it because Democrats want you to believe that government is your father and he's here to take care of you.
Yes. Okay. Socialized medicine. That's what Obamacare is.
I got you.
Yeah.
All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. All right. Next story, Chris.
Well, let's go to New York City. Where
New York
in a
City.
Few days, Zohran Mamdani.
Zohran Mamdani.
Is the mayor, yes. The socialist or communist, whatever he wants to be identified as today. He's going to be entering office as the new mayor of New York City.
Okay.
And he has made the news over the weekend because he's appointed someone to be his fire commissioner. And this person is named Lillian Bonsignor. And I'm not making this up. Lillian is going to be running the fire department of New York City.
Okay.
And Lillian has never been a firefighter. But one thing she is an open lesbian, which led to a lot of people over the weekend criticizing Mamdani for a DEI hire. I've got a couple of clips here. Mamdani thinks this is a slam dunk of a hire. Clip one.
And they deserve a leader who cares about their work because she did it herself, who understands every detail and who will fight tirelessly to empower FDNY and make it the best firefighting force in the world.
Now,
all right. Yeah. Now, that was Mayor
Mamdani.
Mamdani. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to learn.
Soon to be mayor, yeah. Mamdani.
So, listen, I'm not one who necessarily thinks somebody has to have a given experience to be an overseer of a team or of a, I mean, there are coaches in the NFL who never played professional football.
True.
You know, there are presidents who were television stars.
Yeah.
And were never elected officials. Mm-hmm. So that it doesn't disqualify you in my mind necessarily that you haven't done a particular job before you take a leadership role in that profession. Does that make sense?
I get you.
However, with a fire department, you gotta have been a fireman. I mean, that is one of those professions to me where you've got to identify with the people you're leading. And if you've never been, so you're telling me that the mayor there, mayor elect, has put in place over the fire department of New York City, which is massive,
sure,
a massive organization, somebody who's never had firefighting experience?
Correct. She has worked in EMS, kind of the ambulatory side of the fire department, and
okay,
she wears a uniform as part of her
okay,
job.
So she has had some experience working inside the fire department.
Yes, but
okay,
she's never been inside a burning building with a hose to try to
right,
put out a fire.
Well,
that's what a lot of people are upset about.
You know, all right, next story, because I don't really care. I don't really care what they do in New York.
Okay.
I just want to go fly in, go to my hotel, get on the airplane, go. That's all I want to do, and yeah, I want to do so without being robbed.
Okay.
Mugged.
But it is going to be an interesting story in 26.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
everybody's
yeah,
going to be watching
yeah,
if he follows through with his plan, with his promises.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but you're saying she's an open lesbian, and that's the reason she got the job.
That's what a lot of people are saying she got the job.
That's what
based on her lifestyle choices.
A lot of people are saying that's good.
Yeah, I mean it's news reports, social media posts.
Yeah, yeah, well, you know, that's,
yeah, yeah, and straight.
Did he say anything about that when he announced her hiring?
Not.
We have the first open lesbian fire department chief.
I don't think he said it in those words.
Okay.
I don't think he said it in those words.
All
by
right,
the way, she does say that she knows what the fire department needs and she'll meet all their needs. Let's do this real quick because we have a break coming up and this will fit nicely time-wise.
Okay.
There are some court proceedings that are continuing for Tyler Robinson, the man that authorities say shot and killed Charlie Kirk back in September. And we can do a number of things with this particular audio here. Attorneys for Tyler Robinson are asking a judge not to allow media access inside the court proceedings from this point forward because they're concerned about a media circus. Clip five.
We don't want the chaos that is out in the media in this courtroom. So whatever this court can do to prevent that is what we're asking.
Now, I've got audio here from Donna Rotunno, who is a criminal defense attorney and Fox News contributor, and she was on to respond to this request from Robinson's attorneys. Clip six.
If you're really worried about the chaos, how do you avoid the chaos? You avoid the chaos by allowing the cameras in so you can see what's happening in real time. Chaos begins when you don't know what's happening, and then people create a narrative. So by having the cameras there, people can see for their own eyes, make their own judgments. So I don't think that argument is really worthy here. I think it falls flat on its face. I do think you're absolutely right. The defense needs to talk to their client about how he appears in court. He needs to be taking this seriously. This is obviously one of the most horrific things that we've seen happen before our eyes. And, you know, if we can watch the killing before our eyes,
that's
I think
right.
It's, you know, a little bit ironic that Mr. Robinson is now saying he doesn't want the cameras on him.
Let me ask you this. Who decides whether cameras are allowed in a courtroom?
In this case, it's the judge.
Okay.
Yeah. Because the lawyer for Robinson has already won a few of the petitions she has made. Number one, that the client comes in dressed in a street suit, and rather than an orange prisoner suit, that was one thing she demanded. The other thing is that the media, even if they're allowed in, are not allowed to show his shackled feet as he's sitting in the courtroom. They're not allowed.
Okay.
So the current judge has allowed those two things.
Okay. What's the accused name?
Tyler Robinson.
Tyler. I knew it was Robinson, but I couldn't. Tyler Robinson. He's from Utah.
Yes. 22 years old.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
And so let me ask you this. I've always been, does he claim that he didn't do it?
No, he claims, well, I mean, they have messages that he sent his significant other. The male companion roommate he may or may not have been having relations with, as well as other people in a group chat.
What did he say?
He said that he did it. He said, they were here to arrest him. I'm about to get arrested. I shot Charlie.
I don't mean to sound like I'm playing dumb here, although that's not hard for me sometimes. But I want to ask you,
mm-hmm.
What's the benefit of doing all these gymnastics that this fella and his lawyer is doing, Tyler Robinson, when he's guilty of sin? What is the benefit of saying, listen, I don't want a camera in here. I don't want you to show him in his orange suit. I mean, mm-hmm. The guy's already, has he said, I'm innocent.
Yeah,
I'm not entered a plea. What now?
He has not entered a plea. Yeah.
Well, if you hadn't entered a plea by now, then you're pleading guilty.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
So it's just the way the legal system works.
Okay.
If my assumption is that the lawyers think they may.
He didn't want the death penalty, probably.
Maybe a technicality, possibly a technicality that they can rule on that this evidence is not admissible. You know what lawyers do.
I know.
That kind of stuff.
I think they're trying to tug at the heartstrings of the court of public opinion to try to get him out of the death penalty, which the governor and other people in Utah have said for months they were going to pursue.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, we'll see what happens there, but I know what criminal defense lawyers do, and that's where our system works.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to put an innocent person in jail or in prison. That's the idea. So you have to prove guilt.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're guilty by self-admittance, as you say, this text is, and then the video footage of him jumping off the building and running and hiding, and mm-hmm. what he did at his parent, with the gun of his grandfather and all that. Maybe it's a matter of trying to get out of the worst, as you say, the some kind of plea deal
uh-huh.
that they will broker where he gets to life in prison rather than the electric chair or whatever they do there in Utah. We'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
Sometimes as we travel down life's road, the going gets rough. The sailing isn't always smooth on the sea of life. Sometimes it gets kinda bumpy. There are three things we can do in life when the going gets rough. One thing we can do is to resign. And you'd be surprised at the number who take this course of relief. They will lead the parade when the going is easy and smooth and everything is in good order. Yes, sir. They'll strut high and mighty as long as there's a band playing and the streets are lined with folks shouting hoorays. But let difficult times set in, and they are nowhere to be found. Usually those who resign when the going gets rough are those who come in for purely selfish reasons. They only wanted to get something for themselves, not willing to make any sacrifice and not desiring to make the road any smoother. They check out when the going gets rough. Another thing we can do when the going gets rough is to become resigned. Did I pronounce that right? Let me say it again. Another thing we can do when the going gets rough is to become resigned. We can cry and weep while repeating the worn-out phrase, "Well, it has always been this way and always will be this way." And I guess if it's left up to them to change matters and make them better, they're right. Things always will be this way, for they certainly aren't going to put forth any sweat to make them better. It takes no great effort to accept things as they are and not try to make them any better. We can become resigned real easy. And a great advantage to this is that we can quit without checking out. We can stay in and do nothing. Seems to be several of those folks around, doesn't it? I said there are three things we can do when the going gets rough. The third thing is this. We can become re-signed. I borrowed some money from the bank once. My note was made out for a year. At the end of the year, I had paid most of the note back, but some of it I had to carry over. A new note was made, and I had to re-sign it. The old signature was no longer any good. Many of us need to get a fresh signature on our credentials. Once I had to go to a notary public to get a paper notarized. I noticed that on the notarization, the notary public had written, "My commission expires on," and it gave a date. You know, perhaps we are operating under an expired commission. Maybe we need to re-sign. When the hard times come, I want God to know He can count on me. He didn't run out on me when the going got rough. He stuck it out, even to the cross. And it would be mighty little on my part if I backed out on Him when the going got rough. I want Him to know He can count on me when the hard times come. When the going gets rough, we can resign, become resigned, or we can re-sign. Those who resign or become resigned never help the cause. Those who re-sign do. Take up your pen and put a fresh signature on the dotted line of life.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. According to His great mercy, He has caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. 1 Peter 1:3.
American Family Radio. This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. Tim Wildman here with Fred Jackson and Chris Woodward. And we hope you had a wonderful Christmas celebration. And that may have been the longest time we took off from this show.
I think so, yeah.
We were off Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Played Christmas music.
Yes, hope it was good.
Hope people enjoyed our Christmas music that we played there for 3 days. And we're back at it, and we'll be off January 1, right? Brent Creeley, our producer. When are we off?
We'll be off Thursday and Friday of this week for New Year's.
Okay, so New Year's is now 2 days?
Yes, sir.
They changed
yes.
it?
Yes, sir.
Okay, was this
yes,
a executive order by President Trump, or how did this happen? We're off. Thursday is New Year's.
Yeah. That's correct.
And so we decided to take the Friday off, too, like a lot of Americans. We like to back-to-back our holiday.
Sure,
that's right. Plenty of time to watch college football bowl games, including the Duke's Mayo Bowl, Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah. America will be watching that one.
Yes,
Chris.
They will.
Yes.
Yeah.
We do have college football playoffs lined up for this week. Is this week? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
January 1.
Local team here.
No, December 31st, which is Wednesday night, right?
Uh-huh.
Wednesday night. I think that is, Ole Miss and Georgia is Wednesday night. I'm not sure. I think that may be Oregon and Texas Tech or something on Wednesday night. Anyway, there's one of those games. You got Ohio State and Miami. You got Ole Miss and Georgia. You got mm-hmm. Texas Tech and Oregon. And you got, what's the one I'm missing here?
Rose Bowl.
Alabama and Indiana.
Yeah, Rose Bowl.
Yeah, the Rose Bowl.
Yep.
So Alabama and Indiana both got to go 2,000 miles to play a game, right? But, hey, there are worse places to play than
the legendary
Rose Bowl. What are you going to say, Chris?
If I was a Hoosier, I wouldn't mind going to watch a football game in Southern California.
Oh, right, yeah.
On January 1st compared to the alternative.
That sounds like a Dr. Seuss point. And if I were a Hoosier.
Yeah.
And nobody from Indiana has ever been able to tell me what a Hoosier actually is.
It's a person from Indiana.
Yeah. And then kinda you got kind of like Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah, with the Hokie?
They're called the Hokies, and then nobody knows what a Hokie is, really. We do know about the Hokie Pokie.
What is a Hokie?
We do know about that. All right, hey, I wanted to tell folks real quickly, remind folks, if you haven't heard us already talk about this, we got some wonderful trips planned for 2026 that – you may want to take advantage of if you're looking to go on a vacation with a purpose. I'll just tell you real quickly the tours we got lined up. In June and September, we do back-to-back tours. By back-to-back, I mean the days are back-to-back. So in June and September, as we do every year, we go to Colonial Williamsburg, we go to historic Jamestown, and we go to Yorktown. That's a Sunday night through Wednesday tour, okay? We pick everybody up at the airport in Washington, get on the bus, and we travel together so that we take care of you, okay? That's for people who want to fly in. Mm-hmm. Some people drive in. They drive to Williamsburg and join us there. So that's one trip. And then on Wednesday, we come back to D.C., and we see our capital city. We do that Thursday, Friday, and then we go to Mount Vernon, George Washington's Mount Vernon on Saturday, and the tour concludes Saturday night. So if you want to stay with us for 7 days, basically, we'll take care of you the whole time, and you'll see all those sites I just mentioned. If you want to do one or the other, you don't have to do both. You can pick one of those tours. But we do that for a week in September and a week in June, okay? And this year, for the second year, we're going to Boston, the greater Boston area, for a tour there. And Lexington and Concord and Plymouth Rock and all the sites of historic Boston, the Freedom Trail. It's fantastic. And so those tours are available. And we have historians, Stephen McDowell, Timothy Barton from Wall Builders is going to Boston. So this isn't just drive by a site and say, hey, isn't that nice, or let's go in that building. This is you get the context of the people, places, and events that shaped our country's founding. And so that's what makes the tour unique. So if you want information on anything I just described and want to go with us, you can go to this website, wildmangroup.com. It used to be Spiritual Heritage Tours. That's why I stumble every time. WILDMON group.com. WILDMON group.com. And you can read about everything there, the cost, the itinerary, Q&A. There's some things there. So just check out all the tours that we're taking in 2026, and we would love to have you and or your family join us. You're listening to Today's Issues. What story's next, Chris?
All right, Minnesota Fraud remains.
Minnesota Fraud.
Yes, Minnesota Fraud.
Is that a band?
No, it's a news topic.
Be a good band name, though, wouldn't it?
It would.
For a heavy metal group or something?
Minnesota Fraud.
Yeah. Now to the stage.
Sunday. Only at the Coliseum. Yeah.
You sound like you were doing the ones with the big tires, the trucks.
Yeah.
Monster trucks.
Monster Jam.
Yes. Minnesota Fraud.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, so Minnesota Fraud has been a big issue for days, weeks, really, because news reports popped up in early December about various Somali immigrants perpetrating massive fraud in Minnesota, which, according to news reports, may reach as much as about $9 billion now.
Can I break this down?
Yes.
Excuse me for interrupting, Chris, because I want to break this down if I can. Fred, correct me if I'm wrong. Chris, you correct me if I'm wrong if you want to, because I want people to understand how it matters. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the United States federal government, known for its efficiency.
Yes. Yes.
And, huh? Am I right? Is this legendary?
Well-oiled machine.
Yes, yes. The United States federal government sends out money to the states for various and sundry reasons, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Every state is guilty. Well, I say guilty. Every state, you may not look at it like that. Every state receives grants and monies from the United States federal government, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So for all kind of different reasons. And so the federal government sent money to Minnesota to pay for, and then the state of Minnesota then administered the money or divvied it out. Again, this is the way I understand the story, so please correct me. Divvied it out to applicants. In the case of Minnesota, you had, and these took place in Somali. They got a big Somali population. They took place in Somali parts of the city where they created these phony businesses. Mm-hmm. And the child care was one of them, right?
Yes.
Correct.
So the business was in name only. There was no real child care taking place, but the government of Minnesota was taking the money and giving it to these organizations anyway. And these organizations, the people were getting rich.
Yes.
Getting wealthy off the fraud.
Yes.
Going on. And nobody was seemingly checking up on this. Nobody was. And that's where Governor Waltz comes in and his administration in. He's a VP. He was the VP for Harris, his mm-hmm. VP choice.
Correct.
So he's up there now, and he's under siege because his administration was the one divvying out all this fraudulent money. Mm-hmm. Have I got the story right, Fred?
You have the story right. Just to add a few things.
Okay.
During COVID, the Biden administration really opened up the purse strings. I mean, they were sending money out just like it was water.
Yeah.
And we're talking about checks for hundreds of millions of dollars going to these states. The story in Minnesota, actually, the indication of fraud started back 2 or 3 years ago when Biden was still in office. But nothing was done about it. So now, as Chris was just saying, we're up to about the estimate is up to about $9 billion in fraud.
In Minnesota alone?
Just in Minnesota alone.
Okay.
All right.
So this goes back to COVID money.
Yes.
Okay.
When the government
was, I know, I remember you said handing it out like candy.
It was just incredible. And Chris, the big story that came really over the weekend is that this freelance journalist, he's 23 years old, and his name is
Nick Shirley.
Nick Shirley. He's 23 years old.
Okay.
He does what good reporters used to do. He went to the offices of these various, the daycares and the home care and all of this sort of thing, and he started knocking on doors.
Yeah, he found out that these things are about as authentic as a $4 bill.
Yes.
And this audio, this is like one of several videos that he's put out here, but we've got about a minute's worth of sound here. Clip 3.
Here in Minnesota, massive fraud is taking place within the government and the Somali population. Here, this building alone, Quality Learning Center, is a daycare, yet they spelled learning wrong, and they said leering. This daycare alone in 2025 has received $1.9 million from the government. And the strange things about these childcare centers is there's no one here right now. It's midday on a weekday, and if you were to try to go inside, it's completely closed and the windows are all blacked out. No one's working. Midday, children should be in here, and this place is licensed for 99 children, and this is the outside. There's no windows, no nothing. And like I said, they literally spelt the word wrong on their sign. This is open and blatant fraud taking place here inside of Minnesota. The government is complicit with this, and this is just one of the hundreds of child daycare centers here inside of Minneapolis being ran by the Somali population. It's sad that it's happening here in Minnesota, and it stinks that it's happening, and it's being labeled on the Somali population. However, that's just the facts of what's happening here inside of Minnesota. $1.9 million for this daycare center that can't even spell learning right.
Okay.
It's amazing. These videos that...
Who was that fellow right there?
Nick Shirley.
Nick Shirley has done.
Okay.
As of just about an hour ago, they have been viewed 113 million times. People are just in shock. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the other mainstream media, Associated Press, ABC News, CBS News, NBC News, not even covering this.
And that makes no sense because it's a juicy story that involves tax dollars, many of them from
Democrats.
Yeah,
but it makes the Democrats look bad. They're not going to do that.
That's true.
They're especially Waltz, I don't know what kind of future he has in the national politics. I doubt he'll go anywhere. But
well, he is seeking re-election. And
okay, re-election people, as governor. Okay.
Yes, and there are people in Minnesota that are upset by this. And I can say that based on some more audio from another journalist named Liz Collin. She's a reporter for Alpha News who also has been covering the Minnesota fraud story. And she said this to Fox Clip 4.
Absolutely. There is just mounting frustration, though, I can tell you, just among taxpayers in Minnesota as they're seeing more and more of this. We actually went out recently to check out a new round of sites, autism centers, adult daycares, programs rife with fraud. And I'll be honest, so much of this just seems fake. They have fake Google reviews, fake stock photos on their websites. In many cases, we found phone numbers don't work on their websites. And you're right, how Governor Walz is acting seems pretty telling as well. He seems to be making some maneuvers now as he runs for re-election for a third term in Minnesota. But I can tell you there is a petition that's been going around for just the last couple of weeks. Tens of thousands of people have now signed it, demanding that he resign in the wake of this fraud. So clearly a story that, where there is more to come. And again, mounting frustration, I think, among the taxpayers here in Minnesota.
I didn't know there were states left that allowed governors to run for a third term. So Minnesota, evidently.
Yeah, there's a few. Most states are term limited, such
by,
as ours.
By two. Most states, you only can run two consecutive times as a governor. In Virginia, you can only go one.
Yeah,
I think you can come back and run a second time, but you got to allow you can't run two consecutive terms. So yeah. That's interesting that Waltz is running for his third term as governor.
Another aspect of this story of fraud there in Minnesota is millions of dollars. So you got, as you outlined, Tim, you got millions of dollars coming from the federal government going to these phony agencies run, for the most part, by Somalis there in Minneapolis. What they have found out so far is that millions of those dollars are being sent to Somalia.
Wow. And, that seems like a crime.
Oh, cash.
Well, a lot of people have been indicted up there, haven't
at
they?
At least 80 have been indicted so far. And Kash Patel, FBI Director Kash Patel, has said this is just the tip of the iceberg. The tip of the iceberg.
Well, I can tell you, politically speaking, I think we all know this, why Governor Walz doesn't want to deal with this issue. Has he said anything personally? I saw his spokesperson said something.
He's spoken out against, racist, everybody lumping in all Somali immigrants as being terrible people.
So he's going to play the race card?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, he's playing the race card this way. he's not being, it sounds like to me, he's not being critical of this because of he fears that the Somali community may vote against him in an election.
Sure. Yeah.
So he's not going to criticize them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, nobody's blaming the whole Somali population for the crimes of some, but it just happens to be inside their community.
Yes.
And so that's why the spotlight is on them.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, all right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Next story, Chris.
All right, let's go back about 5 years when then House Speaker Nancy Pelosi tore up President Trump's speech at the end of, I guess, his last State of the Union address. Remember at the end of the speech?
Oh, we remember it well. Yeah, she took his speech and shredded it right in front of President Trump and everybody. The whole world saw that.
Now, the reason I'm bringing up a five-year-old topic is because Nancy made news over the weekend.
You know her personally?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, we exchanged Christmas cards.
Nancy. Okay.
Did you get ice cream?
No. But anyway, Nancy Pelosi talked about this issue with ABC's Jonathan Carl.
Yeah.
And she made these comments about that speech, ripping up the script.
Okay.
Clip 11.
It was a horrible meeting. I think those people must have been embarrassed. If you look at the picture, when I'm looking at them, they've got their heads down. But what, you know what I'm saying when I go out the door?
What?
I'm leaving here because I've had it with you, Mr. President. With you, all roads lead to Putin.
They put that picture out and said, crazy Nancy's on the hinge or whatever.
Is that what we're supposed to be hearing?
She's the end of the speech.
I get more requests to sign that picture. People like the tearing up of the speech. I didn't intend to go to speech to tear it up, but I just, the first part of it, I tore a page because he was lying, and then the next page, and then the next page. And I thought it was a manifesto of lies all throughout. So I better just tear up the whole speech. Now, the speeches are on strong paper. They're on, so you have to do it a few times to get it done. But I had no intention of doing it. I thought my staff is going to die.
I had no intention of tearing up the speech.
Yeah.
My
hands just went crazy there for a minute. And just, next thing I knew, I had torn up a speech, the State of the Union speech. Well, that was one of the most tackiest moments in the history of our State of the Union address, you know. But
so much for decorum.
Yeah.
She knew what she was doing when she tore that up.
Yeah.
It's
just
like the Republican guy 10 years ago when Obama was president that shouted, "You lie!" You remember him?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
And he was sanctioned for it.
Yeah. Yeah, she wasn't sanctioned for tearing up the speech.
Nope.
Yeah, just bad.
Nope.
All right.
I'll talk to her since we're close.
Yeah, you called her Nancy.
That's wrong, I wondered
if you guys were on a first-name basis or whatever. You're listening to Today's Issues on AFR. Next story, Chris.
All right, Erica Kerr.
Are we out of stories yet?
No.
We got more? Okay.
No, we still. But wait, there's Murr.
Okay.
All right, so Erica Kirk, the widow of Charlie Kirk, she was on Fox over the weekend to talk with Shannon Bream about how she's dealing with the absence of Charlie, who, of course, was shot and killed back in September during a TPUSA event in Utah. And Erica said that she's had to rely on her faith to get her through the tough times. Clip 12.
And the answer to me is just so simple. Like, you trust in the Lord, and when you trust in the Lord, you do it. And faith is so powerful when it's lived out, but I don't have this massive in-depth answer. God is good, and the world is evil. Don't be surprised when the world acts like the world, but I know that the Lord will use everything.
Huh. I can post more of the segment.
Who is she doing an interview with?
Shannon Bream.
Oh, okay. Shannon Bream on Fox News. I like her. She's a believer, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Shannon Bream. Erica Kirk, she has really been a strong woman, given what happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to, you know, you wonder, well, why is she doing so many public appearances and interviews? She probably does less than she gets asked to do, I'm sure. But she wants to, this is the best I can tell, and I don't know her personally. I did see her, I was in the audience at Ole Miss when she and Vice President Vance were there a few months ago for an event by Turning Point USA. But I think the reason she's making some public appearances and interviews is because she wants to keep the organization going, Turning Point USA. She wants to keep it growing and flourishing, and so that's why she is the CEO now.
Yes. Mm.
So I don't know if she'll maintain that position, if they'll find somebody else that can do it, and then she will be kind of off the stage, so to speak. But for right now, she's doing these kinds of interviews, and I don't know what Shannon Bream asked her there. I should probably ask her, how are you coping, you know, in light of the tragedy? Mm-hmm. But anyway, I just admire her. I really do.
Well, she's carrying on. Her husband had such a passionate views on these issues,
right,
of trying to bring young people back to thinking about where they had strayed.
Right.
And she shares that passion that Charlie Kirk had. She, mm-hmm. you know, married to the guy, and she's just carrying that forward. And the horrible assassination of Charlie Kirk has led to even a greater focus on what he has stood for, mm-hmm. and what he died for, mm-hmm. Is bringing young people back to this point where Charlie Kirk wanted people to think about their worldview.
Yeah.
Where do you get that from? And he was willing to go into what would be the lion's den, going to these universities and taking the flak from these young people, but then challenging them in a very positive way to think about what they were saying.
Yeah.
Where did you get this idea?
Right.
Where did you get the idea that a little baby in the womb is not a human being? Mm-hmm. Where did you get that from? Mm-hmm. She wants to carry that on.
Yeah. I know. I don't know the Bible verse. I should know, but it says, "Come, let us reason together."
Yes.
You know where that is? It's in the scripture. Basically, it's I think that's God speaking.
Isaiah 1:18.
Okay. Isaiah 1:18. But come, let us reason together. And Charlie Kirk tried to get people to debate.
Yeah.
And discuss, mm-hmm. and analyze in it with an open mind, all kinds of different topics, including Christianity. And when he did so, he wanted to use a persuasion to get people to think about things and to possibly change their minds and about issues, and not just politics, but he was very engaged in spreading the gospel. Mm-hmm. So Frank Turek told us that.
Yes.
Dr. Frank Turek has told us that. In fact, Charlie Kirk sought out Dr. Frank Turek, our friend from I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist show on Saturday and Sunday here on AFR. Frank will tell you that Charlie sought him out to be his mentor when it came to defending the Christian faith and what we call apologetics, mm-hmm. and the resurrection, defending the resurrection of Christ and all those things, which would help him, that is Charlie, when he went out and debated on college campuses. And the thing about it is, you know, he would take all comers, mm-hmm. Charlie Kirk would. And so you could come up to the microphone. We've all seen his videos. Most of us have. Mm-hmm. And he would just start engaging somebody. It didn't matter if they believed like him or not. In fact, he wanted people to disagree with him so that he could counter with his own arguments. So anyway.
Yep.
So Charlie Kirk, the Erica Kirk there, commenting on how she's coping and dealing with, the aftermath of losing her husband like she did. All right, we will be back momentarily with more of today's issues. Chris, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And Steve Paisley Jordahl will bring his news to us in just a few minutes right here on today's issues. Stay tuned.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.